Listener warning, everything about this podcast is offensive and often stupid. It can be measured in IQ, or it can be measured in vision. Intelligent vision. Intellivision.
Or intelligence can be measured by how much beer you can drink in a single evening. So we've been drinking for a long time, so this should be interesting at this point.
Yes, it should. Oh, by the way, welcome to the podcast that recently has been mentioned on the NewYorkTimes.com website. It's Guys, Gains, and Beer! Yeah!
Wrong with that, okay? It's
.com. It is still the New York Times. We've been mentioned in the New York Times, ladies and gentlemen.
.net.
Dot whatever. Dot whatever.
And Yahoo.
And Finance. Yahoo. Financial news.
They're such big rollers. You know, the Twin Towers have really been doing well lately. Yeah. Every swank magazine mentions the G2B Towers now.
I'm just saying, you know, Yahoo Finance is a pretty reputable source.
Not anymore.
Yeah, it is.
Not anymore.
Excuse me, but if you're trying to learn, you know, see stock market trends, Yahoo Finance has historically and is currently the best financial website that
it's
you can G2B go to. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, wait a minute. Are they paying us for this? Because they better be paying us for this at this point.
They're paying me.
Okay, so. That's fine then. All right. Let's start with Rob. What system are we talking about tonight?
Well, I think instead what we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about bits of justice. How about it, Larry?
All right. So this actually ties in nicely with the system we're talking about tonight. What is the show beer tonight, Larry?
Okay, today we have 16-bit DPA for double pale ale. This one's out of Kansas by the bottled by the Tall Grass Brewing. The reason we selected it is just because of the name. Okay, really just because of the name. And the reason is today we are going to do a deep dive into Intellivision. And why would that be a tie-in?
Why, Larry, is that a tie-in?
Because, according to some, television is the first 16-bit system. It had a 16-bit console system.
Indisputable. Actually,
yeah,
it had a 16-bit processor. You wouldn't have thought,
right?
You wouldn't have thought a 1979 system, because would have a 16-bit processor in it, but it did. So, and on the show we have done other ones where there's some debate as to is it because it's got a 32-bit graphics, but it got 13-bit CPU or whatever. But this is a 16-bit system, so we're kind of celebrating that a little bit.
More than the TG-16 was, actually.
Yeah, actually.
Another actually. True. Damn it. Well, I quit saying actually.
Hey, but that's a drinking game.
Is 16-bit.
16-bit, he says.
From Tall Grass Brewery.
From Tall Grass Brewery, he says.
All right. Actually, give me the microphone.
16-bit, I said. Tall Grass Brewery, I said. So, that being said, I got to say, this is the same group that made the 8-bit, which was a standard pale ale, an IPA.
We have not reviewed that one either, have we?
Yeah, I think we did the 8-bit on the show at one time.
It may have been just making a segue on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
For some reason, I thought
we did skateboard.
The
8-bit.
I think I just dreamed of it once.
No, maybe not.
And
maybe
thought it was really good.
We haven't done it. All right. Well, let's go ahead and give this a try and see what we think, guys.
All right. Hoppy Central.
I'm not feeling it so much.
My problem is it doesn't. My issue is I don't feel like it does either thing very well.
I'm changing my vote from rehearsal.
We've
been drinking more now.
It's not a great Indian Pale Ale.
I don't think it's a double anything.
No, and I don't think it's a good Pale Ale.
It doesn't
penetrate me at all, really.
Not twice. Definitely not doubly.
Not at least double. No.
So I just don't feel like it's not really doing anything well. Okay. You know, it's not particularly bad.
It reminds me
of how I feel about Miller 64. It's not good water, and it's not good beer. You know, it's. She's not doing anything well.
Yes, but you need to talk into the microphone.
Get closer to it. Fine, I'll get like right up on it, like Tom was earlier.
Yeah, just go ahead and lean right in.
Right up on it.
Yeah, especially.
No, that's not the one.
All for the boobs.
I'm not like Nat Five Fords. Sorry, guys.
Continue.
Well, when I think of a pale ale, a double pale ale, or an IPA, I feel like it should have more hops, but then it should also have a bit of flavor to it, not just the hops. Like, it needs to have something else to it to make it
This is just got hops. It's got nothing else going for it.
And, like, IPAs are my favorite, you know, so I love the hops and stuff. I just feel like there's not much to
it. It's not that it's not drinkable. There's nothing to it. There's not much flavor.
You can definitely drink it.
Yeah.
It's just not much flavor.
All right,
flavor,
so, ladies and gentlemen, what do you think?
All right.
I'm with Sideways now.
Okay.
I've had enough of it now.
Down. Sideways. It's about a mixed toss-up. I'm going to say right now, overall, yeah, it's okay. Nothing good.
Nothing special.
The artwork on the original version, the 8-bit, was far better. It really was an 8-bit style.
Absolutely.
And this is, I'm not sure what the hell. It's kind of like a Pac-Man wearing
Do we even feel like it's representative of a 16-bit game? You know,
it's not.
I feel like he's wearing a kamikaze headband because his beer bombed.
Oh, damn! But true.
Okay, so
destroyed. Right. So let's get back down. What are we talking about tonight, Rob? We are talking about the Intelligence and Vision, the Intellivision.
Which is really what it was meant to be. It was a conjunction of intelligent and vision. It's television. Jesus, Rob. Okay, so let's talk all about it.
Have another one, man.
I will.
You got it. You got this. I believe.
I believe I can fly. It was released by Mattel in 1979 by their electronics division. That's Mattel Electronics.
We have been drinking a lot.
It's Mattel Electronics. Yeah, Mattel Electronics, which was their electronics division, which they made so that basically protect ourselves if they went out of business. Which, flash forward, they do.
Yeah, but no, but that them going out of business was their fault. So, but before they came out with this, they'd actually come out with a line of handheld games. Now, when I say handheld, back then, handheld isn't the kind of things you think about, like the DS or the, even go back that far, the Sega
Game Gear
or the Game Boy.
Or the Atari Lynx.
Yes. Or the Lynx. Oh, wow. So handhelds back then were like single-playing games with LED lighting. They actually came out with some pretty darn good games back then. Are you shotgunning that? Larry, are you shotgunning that beer?
No, it was just a little frozen, so they just had to capture it before it was everywhere.
You had to lick the head.
It might be a little slush. It might be beer slush.
Do you need a new one?
Okay, so they originally started years earlier, Mattel Electronics, to do those line of games.
Yeah, and they were actually really good.
We have displayed these systems on our shows in the past, the head-to-head football and some of the other ones, the little car games and baseball. So we've had these on the game on the show before.
Right, and most of these were LED games, and they were really, really good for their time. I mean,
they're still fun. I mean, they are still fun to play. They re-released them not too long ago.
Yeah.
And they sold pretty well. I mean, because they were actually solid games.
Right. And the originals are fairly collectible.
Very crude, but they were good.
Yeah.
All right. So they started that, and then in 79 they introduced the Intellivision.
Yes, in 1979. It was released in 1979. No actual date because coordination had not been invented yet. That was not a thing yet. They did not set a date because nobody was waiting for a console to be out.
Right. So in 79, though, they did like a limited release. What was it, like Sacramento? Yeah. Just a small area of California.
I think they probably expanded a little bit and then just went nuts by 1980.
Yeah, I was going to say, I felt like wide release was, you know, almost up to 82.
Nah.
I think 80.
I mean, it was there.
I think 80, 81 was probably more for the wide release. I think 79 was really when they were just testing the market.
Because when it comes to its competition in that, I got a sense that it ran into not just the Atari, but it ran into Coleco. It was a little bit of ahead of them. And Vectrex was coming.
Yeah.
So, you know, I felt like it was, even though it maybe started earlier, still came late to the party.
Also, the crash of 83 was not far behind.
I think it came dead nuts where it should have come. That didn't sound good at all.
But continue anyway.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you said it. You said it. Just keep rolling with it. Just keep rolling.
That came out perfectly, yeah, is what he meant.
Thank you for that correction. It came out right when it should have come out. I mean, it was a little bit better than the Atari 2600. In fact, it was impressively better. It was 2 years after Atari's release. It showed 2 years of advancement, except in the controller, but we'll get into that. The Intellivision.
Oh, wait a minute, though. Wait a minute.
I knew you were going to do this, Larry.
I knew it.
Continue. He's got a mic now. He's got a mic this time, at least.
Saw this one.
Okay, continue.
Let's be honest.
Well, some would argue that it actually had a significant advancement with the directional pad.
Yeah.
And the numeric keypad built in as well.
Which did almost nothing most of the time, but we're not going to.
For sports games, the numeric pad was a plus.
For plays, it was a plus. It wasn't one that gave it a big advantage over Atari. I think the big advantage it had is when you looked at those games head to head, like the same game, same version, because the arcade was huge by this time. I mean, they were looking for graphics that were a little bit better than what you can see on the Atari 2600, and it had that. It had some good games.
Oh, that's definitely true.
Yeah,
definitely true.
Even some of its individuals were pretty good. But anyway, it was released under several different names. It was in Sears, it was called the Super Video Arcade. I'll come back to that. In Radio Shack, it was called the Tandyvision. And Sylvania made one called the Intellivision as well. And basically, the differences were a badge. Except in one case. The case of Sears' version was almost completely physically different from the other versions. It was white. Number one, well, real light gray. That's not it. Okay. It's actually uglier than that one. But it was still good looking. It was actually an okay looking console. The controllers were mounted vertically as opposed to horizontally. It had round buttons as opposed to the flip switches on that Intellivision version, the original Intellivision version. It was significantly different. It looked like a different console. You could be fooled into thinking it's a different thing. It's not. It's exactly the same guts inside.
Okay, so now the there was a few modules for the original Intellivision, the 79-80 version. Would they work with the Sears one, or did they have to come up with their own modules?
Where it counted, hanging out of the side, that ridiculous cartridge port that it has, I'll go into that.
Expansion too. Port, yes.
It still works.
Oh, so you could still hook up the regular Intellivoys, or the
Yeah, they were pretty uniform with.
Oh shit, the Intellivoys.
Oh, we'll get into that.
Sears had kind of a history of re-engineering the box itself.
Oh, definitely, they had the clout at the time to be able to tell these companies, "Hey, we want our badge on them," and they had built the Telegames brand. I mean, it was an actual brand. It sold well. My parents bought me. Mine was Intelligames when I bought it. Not an Intellivision.
But my original Atari Atari 2600 came from Sears.
Have another drink, Tom.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. So it took me three times to get that out. I'm okay with that. But that being said, mine was not an Atari. Mine was a Telegames.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, I actually was fooled by this a little bit, just based on timing and stuff. I knew that Sears had a significantly different look, or at least on one Atari version, and you know, and it almost looked like more like the 5200, what eventually became like a 7800, kind of had that Sears look. But I'm
the arcade too. That was my Atari, which was the Sears Arcade 2, and that one was actually the 2700 in Japan. Originally, early on in its development, it had remote controls and everything. It was really cool looking, but it still looked great. Built-in paddles. It was a damn good looking system. I can't believe they didn't release that as an Atari branded Atari. But yeah, it was originally a Japanese version. They just brought that version
and
over.
Sears got that.
Yeah, that's a good idea on Sears.
That was actually.
So I guess my point is Sears is gotten had a little bit of during this time a history of running their own path.
Well, like Rob said, they had the clout to do it. They were already developing a lot with video games and knew how to market things. Sears had good marketing back then and could.
And weren't owned by Kmart.
Oh, ouch. Ouch. Okay, well, true that, too. All right, so, continue.
Now they're just owned by bankruptcy court. Oh!
I don't think anybody even heard that comment.
I don't think so either. It's all right.
But maybe they should.
All right, so, Rob, what's next?
Original price was $299.
So about $1,000 nowadays. If you spent $299, it's about $1,000 in 2015 cash.
Hey, inflammation. Woo!
Inflammation.
Oh, inflammation.
That was good.
What's inflamed, Mike? What's inflamed?
I don't want to talk about it.
Oh! Ouch.
I need that. No, I'm not. I'm done talking.
Yeah, that totally came out wrong. Yeah.
Drink another one, Mike. Drink another one. That's all.
Do we have a sense of where that was in the market? Was that pretty on par?
That was on par price-wise.
There wasn't a real market because cartridge, it didn't have a whole lot of competition.
Right.
Cartridge, not least right away, it didn't have a lot of competition.
But when most cartridge games came out at that period, the Fairchild Channel F, the Bally Arcade, even the original VCS, you were talking roughly $300 was their original price point. And all that equates to $1,000 in today's cash. So if you think you're paying a lot for video games now, think about that back in 1977 through 80.
And we didn't even get a controller that worked with that.
You know, you had those crappy controllers back then. All right, so
the packing game was Las Vegas Poker and Blackjack.
Wow, could you get any crappier than that?
Considering the games that were available for the Intellivision, it makes you wonder.
There were, what, 9 original release titles
four.
With that? Only four?
Wow,
I thought there was 9, so even less than I thought.
Where's our guessing game? That's the best part of these deep dives.
It's at the end.
You're not done yet. Wait. Continue.
There's 2 whole pages of this, Larry. You got plenty of time.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that Rob's working off his notes.
Oh, yeah. Its main competitor was the Atari 2600. It was mostly advertised as featuring better graphics, which was absolutely true.
Oh,
they can be pretty good. Yeah, they were pretty good.
Just like says, security guard Brian has showed up. Security Brian?
It's, well, my phallic device.
All right, continue, though.
Please.
Batteries are in there.
Why does it have to be so big?
You know what we really need is more distractions in here, Brian. We really need your giant dildo.
Can I make one comment?
Make one comment, Brian.
No, come back. Brian got sick, took his dildo and left.
That's what I was going to say. I feel like his flashlight is trying to overcompensate for something.
Oh. Oh, wait, he's coming back. He's coming back on that one. All right, continue, Rob.
All right, so the Intellivision 1, 2, and later release, INTV3, all run the exact same games. Let's take a look at those guys. Let's go take a look. Yeah, there's some kind of. That brown one over there.
All right.
We showed that one
earlier. Now we'll show it again.
That is the original Intellivision.
So this is the beautiful Woody, the original Intellivision. This came out in originally 79, mass market about 80, 81.
And then the Intellivision 2.
I'm the sexier model.
No,
you are the
two that were produced.
You are
by
the sexier model.
Yes, that's true.
No, the Intellivision is. I'm just saying the Intellivision too. You know?
They were both. Those were both produced by Mattel.
You know what's funny is I find that kind of the tradition of, oh hey, we have our system when it comes out, and then sales are kind of down, so let's just make a smaller version of the exact same thing. Like,
yeah, maybe we're the start of that. Well, Atari did it too.
But there is a reason, because by making a smaller version and making a cheaper version, you get your price point down, so markets that you hadn't touched before, you might be able to reach to.
But the wood grain, man! The wood grain!
Okay.
It was 70s.
We were over that. This is the sleek 80s space model.
Yeah, totally couldn't hear that. Anyway, let's talk.
I was hoping you would repeat it for me.
The Intellivision... I'm too drunk. The Intellivision was originally advertised to have a keyboard expansion coming out that would allow for it to function as a home computer. It would upgrade the RAM to 64 kilobytes, which is actually pretty awesome for the time. Added a 6502 CPU and a data set. By the way, for those who don't know what a data set is, that is a cassette player attached to your computer to load programs with. Only about 4,000 of those units were ever shipped.
Well,
and that was most likely because the FTC was breathing down Mattel's neck. And by breathing down their neck, I mean the FTC was fining Mattel $10,000 a day for deceptive advertising until that goddamn thing came out.
Well, that's because they were selling it as an option as a personal computer.
Yeah, and that was a big push.
And so you would have to have, obviously, a keyboard accessory, and you'd have to have some sort of data storage if you were legitimately going to have a PC option.
Right, but it's not just data storage. Like Rob said, they had the 6502, which was the Motorola processor, which is not any of the processor chips they were using.
It was MOS at that time, wasn't it?
6502?
Yeah, 6510 and 6502.
No, I think that's all Motorola. No, MOS made the subchips for that, but I think it's all Motorola on the 6502. We're going to have to look that up. But MOS.
It was probably like totally being produced by everybody.
But then they added a whole separate processor to make it a computer?
Yeah, I know. Weird, right?
That does seem kind of weird, actually.
Well, I mean, that was the marketing strategy, though.
And
that was the FCC's point was, listen, you sold this as a personal computer, and you're not delivering.
Okay. Did you say the FCC? It was FTC.
He said FCC?
It's the FTC. Right.
Federal Trade Commission.
Yeah.
FTC.
Not the FCC.
FTC. Larry's a little drunk.
No, but the FCC regulates video games too, but more for transmission rates and things like that, where they had to watch what their interference rates.
But
the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, makes sense. And you're right.
There was a damn F involved.
Right. They advertised it as being a computer, and it couldn't function as a computer. I understand the fine.
Yep. That was back when the FTC gave a damn. All right, so the controller. Let's talk about the controllers a minute.
Okay. Wait,
you did mention. I just want to do the resolution of that, unless you have it further on
it's
down.
It's way down there.
All right, I'll let you get to it.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Actually, I didn't cover resolutions, so we'll talk about that in specs. But, all right, the controllers, these are my notes.
I can't even sit on my stool.
The controllers are a loathsome affair. A control disc for movement is mounted at the bottom for primary movement. This is for our audio podcast listeners. Two buttons are mounted on each side of the controller, providing a uniquely unhaptic button pressing experience. You cannot feel those damn buttons.
No, you can't.
It really sucks.
I'm just going to... I'm not going to lie. I didn't even know there was like four buttons on the side right there.
Yeah, I know. That is your non-haptic experience there. It gives no feeling that you pressed a damn button.
Also, I hope you and your friends are best friends, because that control ain't going anywhere.
For those who can't see it, a flattened number pad takes up the top section of the controller, featuring a mounting space for overlays, which are cool as hell. Speaking of overlays.
You know, I actually noticed like there's a cord that goes directly to it, so you would have to pull the console to you. So basically, you'd be sitting on your rough cement floor, getting nothing but hemorrhoids.
Back, all the early video games actually sat close to you. You did not have, because you didn't have remote controllers. Cable cost was a factor in pricing the system out, so they kept the remote controls. I'm sorry, the controller is fairly short. Usually 6-foot cable is about the longest you got. Yes, companies made extension cords, but generally they expected you to have that video game sitting back on a table between your chairs, something along those lines.
Yeah, it's definitely...
That said, the cables were egregious. I mean, they were unusually...
I was going to say... So
there's some overlays over here, too.
Burger time!
Yeah. It's actually it's kind of interesting to see how things have changed too, where a game used to be a console used to be a centerpiece of a room, and where that would bring your eyes to the center of the room, and now you can practically shove an Xbox or a PlayStation or even a PC into an entertainment system, not even know that it's there, and just be like, oh shit, yeah, it works. It's like magic.
But that was the idea. Okay, continue on. No, makes sense.
Oh, we're into the notable section. We actually made it past the first section.
So I'm just... I'm just gonna, this is my own little, like, personal, like, little thing. It's kind of funny how we go from so many fucking buttons to going back after, like, with Nintendo with very few, and then going straight back to having incredibly more buttons.
They were silly.
Yes, they are silly.
Yes and no. Okay, so
the layout was silly.
The layout was silly, but the idea was, by adding the numeric pad to a lot of these controllers, is you could play more complex games than a standard shoot-up. So for sports games, for games where you needed multiple choices, like space simulation games, it gave you other options without going through some kind of on-screen menu.
If Math Blaster came out on that thing.
You said that'd be great for sports games, but let's be honest, it looks like it would be great for, like, sports betting games. Like, yeah, we're going to go on down to the horse track there,
sure,
kids.
Blackjack used it for that.
Yeah, it may have actually used it to place your bet.
You know, if you wanted to select, let's say you had baseball, and you had a baseball in here, you could select which
pitch you were going to do.
Which pitch you could do, but you also could select which outfielder you control. So first base, yeah. Second base, third base. Now you control that base.
Not very well, though.
So was it possible to remap keys?
No.
Okay. I don't know a lot about this.
Like,
and maybe the audience wants to know these things too.
Right. No, but no, they did not. It was a fixed thing. That hence the reason they had these cool overlays, because that way you knew what the keys were mapped as. You could never change the mapping on those.
And quite honestly, the controller was unusable in its mapped condition. It would be unusable if you remapped it. So, it's not totally unusable. I know there were some people who could really play it. It had some advantages. I'll go over some of those. But for the most part, I thought it's too high. It's just too vertically oriented to make it usable.
All right. But that being said, there were third-party controllers that made it better.
Sure. Yeah, the Wicos were excellent for it. Well, they're passable for it. There was nothing to do to fix that damn controller.
Stop it.
I'm not 100% sure. But on a ColecoVision, you could swap out and put an Atari controller in there if you really want. I don't know if you can do that with an Intellivision, so I'm absolutely sure an Intellivision fan will tell us.
Yes, that you could, that you couldn't do that. But continue.
You might be able to, though, because it's 9-pin.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have expected out of a Coleco. All right.
Beer tip. If you'd like your beer to be sort of a cappuccino version, just freeze that bad boy, and you just drink the alcohol.
I really got to readjust that fridge. All right, time for the notables.
All right.
For God's sake, we're getting nowhere here.
By the way, Larry, I just wanted to point it out. I did warn you.
Oh, fucking God.
No, it's okay. Notables.
All right, notables. Intellivision spokesman George Plimpton was a total freaking pimp.
Great name.
Let's face it.
Great name.
Yeah. He was George Plimpton. Honestly, he was a pimp.
Okay, so how did George Plimpton get famous?
He well, doesn't call him the pimp.
Look, listen to this guy. He was not only a well-known writer and actor, he sparred for 3 rounds against Sugar Ray Robinson.
Holy shit!
Trained in the NFL as a backup quarterback, and then played through part of an NHL preseason game. That guy was badass.
He was a total pimp.
Not badass enough? In the Army, he was a demolitions expert. He was a badass. That's one. I am not even going to screw with him, and he's dead.
Do you know what did he serve in any conflicts, or was he like peacetime?
No, it was peacetime, but still, it was right after World War II. But still, I can't believe I looked up the history of George.
He's a very interesting character. He was a spokesman for Intellivision, but he was a brilliant author and a brilliant writer.
He's a sports writer a lot of times.
Yeah, and that's why he did all those sports things. He was mainly a sports writer.
But unlike the wussy sports writers of today, he would actually get out the hell on the field with the guys.
Yeah, fuck you, Lee Corso. Yeah.
Oh!
Not so fast, my friend.
Oh, ouch. Wow. You know, if he sees this show, he's going to come and find you.
That's fine.
Okay.
I'm fine with that.
Continue.
Yeah, like his limp wrist.
Oh! Damn!
Okay.
Wow!
Okay.
Woo!
Intellivision was the first 16-bit gaming system. Take that, TurboGrafx.
Suck it!
That said, it's doubtful that the sub 1 megahertz processor gave the Genesis or the SNES any sleepless nights. The controller disc from hell was the first thumb-based controller. This controller innovation would return again with Nintendo Entertainment System. You wouldn't see it again until that.
The D-pad.
The
NS.
Well, yeah, the DP pad.
The fixed directional pad.
Yeah, it's an early D-pad.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so, yeah.
In fact, it's used later in other game systems because they copyrighted a plus symbol for somehow.
They trademarked the D.
I'm sorry, the plus has actually got a patent on it.
Wait, they were dis, but they somehow patented a cross?
Yeah, they patented the cross.
Illuminati confirmed.
Wow. That is some forethought.
That is crazy.
Yeah,
also,
man, they like read like a crystal ball or something.
Right? Well, unfortunately, television didn't because they didn't trademark. Anyway, they didn't do that. All right, so it was also the first controller to support 16-direction movement, which actually, for a long time, nothing beat it. In fact, Sega Genesis D-pads, SNES gamepads, and Atari joysticks all only support 8.
Yeah.
They were not as nuanced as the Intellivision. That was one of its big selling points back in the day. All right, here's Tom's favorite part. Intellivisions could talk. Well, if you had an Intellivoice.
The Intellivoice, for its time, 7980, when it first came out, was pretty damn impressive. Now, mind you, they only had like 2 games that actually used the Intellivoice. I know. But only there's 4. But only 2 of them were any good. Only 2 of them were any good. Rob, what games did it come out with?
Even though it's amazingly well known, it didn't sell very well, and it was discontinued soon after production. Only 4 games were actually released for the device. I've got 3 of them back there somewhere. And I don't have an Intellivoice, but it's coming, so.
Oh, I was going to say.
Do we know? Okay, so that was like a later development in its system.
No, that came out fairly early.
It wasn't like, actually really early, yeah.
So pretty close.
Yeah, it was not.
The reason I ask is I remember that when we did our Vectrex deep dive, we talked about how it had a voice, and that was a kind of a big thing. Well, and here we have an Intellivision that was doing it earlier.
Yeah,
it was doing it earlier.
Yeah, about 2 years.
It was actually a pretty good voice. Too.
About
it wasn't
2 years before. No, it actually
not bad.
No, the voice is it's a male voice, and it sounds quite good. It's
and this isn't out in the notes, but actually,
is it super sexy?
Yeah.
No, but the didn't they have female voices? I'm not sure, but I do know that the games were one of the few that actually used the voice for something useful. Instead of just saying something to be cool, you actually needed the voice. You actually needed to be able to hear it to do some of the things, especially B-17 Bomber or was doing objectives. But the other games were too. It actually took voice seriously. You needed to hear.
What are the 4 games that use it?
Oh, for the love of God, I knew you were going to ask that, and I didn't put it on the list. I cut it out like last minute. I had the list. B-17 okay. Bomber was one.
Right.
I've got them around the corner.
Yeah, the space game. Space
Spartans. Oh, yeah, everything is space.
Yeah, Space Spartans. But, no, it literally opens up, and it's great, because every time you start the game up, it goes, Mattel presents. Space
Spartans. But you
actually
need it for Space Spartans, too.
You do, yes, because, again, same thing. It tells you your coordinates. It tells you when you're being attacked. I mean, there are things. You're right. The one thing they did with that is it's not just a fluffy add-on.
I think that's why people still like that.
It actually, you can't play the games without the add-on.
So no closed caption.
No closed caption.
You either get the sound or you do not.
Yeah, or you don't play the game.
So they hated deaf people.
All right, so.
That's racist.
I think that was.
They can't hear the podcast. I'm not worried about it.
Oh, damn. Okay, there goes our deaf listeners.
I think that's in your advertisement.
I'm not. Voice. I do not see it.
Because we hate deaf people.
Voice.
No, we don't.
Allegedly. Larry does not speak for the views and opinions.
He did not have a mic in his hand when he said that.
Yeah. If you're angry at anything that Larry says, please email him at larry@guysgatesandbeer.net.
All right. So
I'm just hoping to get some email.
Hope you like hate mail,
Larry. It's all spam. All right. So another feature. Downloadable games.
Okay. This was one of the cool features. Intellivision was...
Wait.
Yeah. This is like before anybody else in television had what was called the Play Cable. Go ahead.
All right. 1981. The Play Cable would allow you to download Intellivision games at your local cable company.
Your local cable company, and in the 80s, they actually were local cable companies. Most cities had their own private cable company.
Yes, the one in Kenosha was Johnson Cable.
That's right. No, exactly. And in Racine, we had Telecable. So literally every city.
That's not phallic.
No, every city had their own cable company, which was part of the issue why it probably didn't succeed as well as it should have. They could transmit games as a subcarrier on the video signal, and this module would download the game into a separate module and hold it.
So was that basically like a precursor to, I guess, like broadcast? Yeah.
That's yeah. Really pretty much to everything. If you think about 81, 82, the fact they were broadcasting games that you could download. This was before the time. This is when modems are still running 300K. Yeah. So, I mean, this was revolutionary, but the problem, again, it was revolutionary at the wrong time. Again, like we talked about, every city had their own little cable company. They had to buy special equipment to be able to broadcast these games down to you. So for large markets like New York City or Chicago or L.A., that's great. But if you lived in Kenosha, Wisconsin or Racine, Wisconsin, and Telecable or Johnson Cable had to buy the equipment, not so much.
So I have a question regarding that. Was that actually broadcast like wirelessly, or was that run through cables?
No, it was literally run through cable. Back then, cable TV was literally a physical cable that ran to your house. So they would put a subcarrier signal under the video that had the game on it.
So it's similar to how you guys will appreciate this. So when you were trying to watch some titty channel. Like late at night, like 2 a.m.
I never did such a thing.
Allegedly, right? No, it's, you would have to call, like if you wanted that channel, you would have to call and, you know, be able to get like the decryption for it.
Right, you had to pay it, but there was no decryption. You had to have that special module anyways. So if you didn't have the module, it wouldn't work. The module was the decoder for it.
Okay.
Can I say something? Wasn't even Ben this time that brought up boobs in the middle of the podcast. Okay? You know?
You're unwelcome.
The boobs were relevant.
They were relevant to this discussion. I'm going to say, actually, I'm going to give Brian that. The boobs were relevant to that discussion.
Now, how did this speed compare to can and a string? Was it faster? How much faster?
Wait, all right. So, I a little bit down a rabbit hole. So from the cable company to your house was through the cable, and you essentially downloaded it, and you had to have the special equipment and that. But the cable company itself, did they download it by satellite and from there?
Right. Correct. Yes. The cable companies at that time were getting all their feeds via satellite. So, yes, it was via satellite. And when we say satellite...
I bet you they had cartridges they just plugged
in. When we say satellite, we mean real satellite.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at is, did Johnson Cable, like, when they got the equipment from Intellivision, did they, like, have, like, did they get a shipment of games that they would put in? Or did they actually get them through the satellite feed? And then distributing through the cable feed. Because I'm, you know what? Actually, fine. And I did not research this. And I'm finding this fascinating that they were getting this done.
I really don't.
No, you know, the thing is, that was fascinating. I mean, if you think again how revolutionary this was, before the time BBSs were in existence. What's that? Yes, there. No, Gopher didn't exist yet. No, Gopher existed. Gopher existed. Yeah.
All right, that's it.
Okay, we are going down the rabbit hole. We're going down the rabbit hole. Okay, continue. But it was a very cool feature, but also a failed feature.
And if you're curious, there were about 15 titles available at any given time. They rotated through them. This happened later with the Atari as well, or around the same time. Atari also had that kind of feature. So, did you regret your Intelli decision? Well, guess what? The system changer would allow you to change. Oh God, I can't do this. Would allow you to play Atari 2600 games on your Intellivision.
So the Intellivision has this. Oh no, on this one. Where's your side port on this? Where's your data port on this one? No. So there was a. So where the cartridge plugs in, there was an expansion you could add on.
Yep. And then you just pass through.
Right. That would allow you to put Atari 2600 cartridges directly into your Intellivision. Basically, it was a 2600 in a box that you plugged into the side of your Intellivision, and it just passed the signal through.
And that didn't get lost.
So that's much like how Genesis did 32. Just plug it right into another.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. The same way the 32X worked in your 16-bit damn Genesis. Just
strangely, it sucked more when you plugged in the expansion.
No, but you know, but that was interesting because not only did Intellivision do this, ColecoVision did the same thing too. They came out with a box that you plugged in that you could use your Atari 2600 boxes, kick cartridges with. It's like, why aren't you guys being, like you said, you're getting your asses sued off.
I think they did one on Coleco. I'm pretty sure they did attempt a lawsuit and it didn't hold. I don't know why, but, you know, the 80s were a different time.
Yeah.
Back in the good old days.
Yep. All right. Here we go. Here's some Larry information. Children. He's going to love this.
Larry information, Larry.
He's going to love this. There was a true successor to the Intellivision called the Intellivision 3, not to be confused with the INTV 3. Totally different systems. The system would have had graphics comparable, if not slightly better than the ColecoVision, increased RAM, built-in IntelliVoice, along with generally improved sound, and it would still be able to run the old Intellivision games. The Intellivision 3 was pretty far along.
We know the death is backward compatibility.
Yeah, that really killed the PlayStation 2.
It's the exception that proves the rule.
And the PC.
Kill the 7800.
And the PC versus Commodore. Okay, and Atari. Okay, so let's keep going.
No, it killed Atari.
Pretty far along. Yeah, they didn't have backwards compatibility.
It's 7800.
I was talking about their computers.
Yeah, but continue.
All right, let's keep going. Intellivision 3 was pretty far along, meaning it was a breadbasket. All right, fine. It was. When it was canceled due to the market entrenchment of the mighty. Guess what's coming up?
Atari.
ColecoVision.
Oh, really?
ColecoVision. Yeah, the ColecoVision kicked the Atari 5200's ass.
Oh, 5200.
So thoroughly that Intellivision said, screw this, I'm going home.
Oh.
All right, so, interesting
fact. Wait. Did it ever make it to market, though?
No, it never did. It never made it past the development stage.
Okay, so then is the Intellivision basically the only system it ever put out?
Mattel.
No, it's coming to the end. Coming to the end here. Let me get to the home stretch
Hang
here.
Hang in there, Larry.
It's the last part of it, Larry. You can do it, Larry. I know. Oh, he's so excited.
He is excited.
You're going to like this next part. You're going to love this one. You are. Okay, so interesting fact. In January 1993,
potential.
Was it 1983? It might have been 1983. Potential distributors were shown what they thought was a demo of a working Intellivision 3. They were duped. It wasn't. It was Intellivision showing some really good graphics demos. The Intellivision was quite capable of doing some really awesome stuff when it didn't have to push any pixels around. It just had to sit there. It could do stuff. And they were fooled into thinking it was actually a next-gen system.
Sprites or pixels?
Nice.
It had sprites.
I know it had sprites. I was wondering, were they pushing sprites or were they pushing pixels on the demo?
Actually, there was two different demos. One was a game, so it would have been... It would have been sprites.
Okay.
Probably would have had sprites.
Yeah.
The other one was actually kind of a standstill thing. So
okay.
That one might have been
pixels. Just pixels.
And I know we've covered it before. Tell me, difference between a pixel and a sprite.
Oh, here.
Go for it.
One little dot is a pixel. Put them all together and make them move like one piece. It's a sprite.
Yep.
The absolute perfect explanation.
I thought about that once.
Technically, is the sprite then handled as a single unit?
Correct. Yeah. The sprite is handled as a single object versus having to turn on and off individual pixels. So if I have a 16x16 grid that makes up my sprite versus having to operate 16 separate pixels, it's much easier to tell that sprite to move one left or one right than telling 16 separate objects to move one left or one right. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was good.
So computer programs are in fact. Computer programmers are in fact quite lazy.
And should be.
No.
Oh, I'm prepared for this one. No. They're not being lazy, and you are right. Yeah, they're being efficient. But due to hardware limitations at the time, they had to come up with a creative way to basically get animations to work.
That was kind of the sprites are actually an example of advanced technology, them having enough space to actually generate a sprite. Before that, on the Atari 2600, every dot was literally being sent out. I mean, it was just being sent out. Sprites actually are... I was kind of surprised that Intellivision supported sprites, to tell you the truth. Because that required a little bit of brain.
Right. Hence,
because you had to have. Oh man, we were so nerdy.
You were going down all the right. We're going down the rabbit hole. Go. No.
You had to have a processor and enough RAM to sit there and say, hey, this is a unit. I'm going to move this unit. It had to do all that work still,
right.
But it had enough spare to make it easier for the program.
Right, so let's talk about this. The Intellivision had RAM and a 16-bit processor. The Atari VCS, no RAM and an 8-bit processor. Hence the reason you can have sprites on this, because you have RAM and a processor, or a good processor, versus an 8-bit, no RAM system.
Yeah, pretty impressive, really. See, he thought it was funny.
Hey.
Somebody had to get the humor out of that. Continue.
All right, here we go.
At least it was bits, not bites.
We're to the death knell.
All right.
All right, so...
The end is nigh.
The Intellivision was produced by Mattel up until 1984. It was one of the first systems to die in the Great Crash of 1983. Didn't survive. Liquidators got a hold of the remaining stock and sold most of it before Mattel marketing executive Terry Valesky bought the rights and formed INTV Corporation, which sold the rest of the old stock via mail order. But once that sold out, guess what happened? The Intellivision was brought back to life, and it was produced until 1991.
Really?
Terry Valesky, you get the thumbs up from Guys, Games, and
Terry
Beer
Valesky?
For dreaming the dream.
Damn straight.
Way to go, buddy.
You know, it's actually kind of interesting that you said that that the Intellivision went on for that long. I just heard it was about 3 weeks ago now that Sony just stopped producing Betamax tapes. Like, you can still go onto eBay and buy brand new, unrecorded, fresh Betamax tapes.
Yeah, well, that's because a bunch of news agencies use Betamax.
To this day?
Yes, to this day.
All the best porn was on Beta.
That's true, too. Continue. Let's get back to what we were
all
talking
right.
about.
All right, so let's go with the numbers game. Numbers game.
Numbers game.
Units sold. Any guesses?
Million plus?
I'm going to do 1.25 million.
That's kind of like a million plus.
Shut up.
2 million. Two
Larry says 2 million. You bet?
Oh, I already looked at the answer.
Oh! So you don't get to go in on this then.
I was at least being honest. I was reading over his shoulder.
Yeah, you're not pulling up Ben Thompson.
All right.
1 million.
1 million, says Tom set. All right. 3 million sold.
Holy crap.
That was Travis, by the way.
All right.
It was produced for an exceedingly long period of time.
How's that comparable? What are some of our other numbers?
Oh, for God's sake, I don't put the numbers on the other ones on there.
Oh, God. You know, you could be so much better completist.
Three million is a damn good
I'll take another 2 days taking notes.
For the
80s. Total games released. Any guesses?
I'm going to say...
I was surprised.
17.
Well, are we going to do official?
Yeah, official.
Official.
Because I know the fact that you didn't get many odd ones. You did a third party.
The Intellivision still had to be in production at the time.
So 91, so... And even some.
I'm going to go 215.
I want to recount.
Recount.
I'm going to say 200.
I'm going to go higher than that, actually. I'm going to go probably 250.
I know it felt like more, but it was 125.
Woo!
Unfortunately, we answered the third question already. Number of release day games for. You know, I lost what they were.
Wasn't it? It was blackjack
and chess.
Yeah, there's one of it. Yeah, there's one of them.
It was like the whole.
Not easy to find.
That's not.
It's Las Vegas poker and blackjack.
Yeah. That was on one cartridge though.
That was one cartridge,
right? Impact. So there was three other games on release date.
So they gave you more for your money.
That's right.
Okay.
That's the Mattel
way. You know what I feel like they were marketing then? They were marketing to dad at that point.
Yeah.
That is what they were marketing. A lot of systems market to kids or market to that was a market to dad system. Poker, blackjack.
Yeah, that is.
I don't know. Some of my best childhood experiences are playing blackjack with a bunch of drunk adults.
So they're marketing to dad. All right.
And Brian, apparently. Okay. Yeah. Processor had a General Instruments CP 1610. Well, we know why they went out of business. 16-bit microprocessor wrecked. Running at 894
megahertz.
Kilohertz.
Oh, kilohertz, kilohertz. I'm sorry, kilohertz. Oh my god. Yeah, back then that would have been beefy.
If I'm in a round, I should round up. I'll say 895. Let's go.
So not even a megahertz.
Yeah, not even a megahertz. Unless you were in Europe.
Could you overclock that bitch?
Wait, one more time awesome.
Than I say that?
Could you overclock that bitch?
He's smoking. the video was the STIC, General Instruments. Oh my god. AY38900.
Okay, so here's the thing. In the late 70s, General Instruments made pretty much all the chips for home game systems, home consoles. They were the ones who originally developed the original Pong on a single chip. They did a series of sound chips. They really had a decent line of dedicated chips for doing that. They were doing LSI, large-scale integration at the time.
I mean, these were actually built for these guys. So.
Who was the manufacturer of that?
It's called General Instruments. They had their main manufacturing plant in Scotland, but they were actually an American company.
Any relation to Texas Instruments?
No. No, completely different company. Texas Instruments actually had their own line of chips and were doing some gaming at that time, but not much. But generally, they were doing money. Exactly. They were doing calculator and a lot of they were doing a lot of Defense Department stuff at the time.
Yes. Okay, so
it had a, want that repeated in
it, no,
no.
I'm not
so
it.
No. Next point.
16 color palette. All of them can be on the screen at once. No limitations there. 8 sprites and 3 channel monographic sound.
Yeah,
that's
so
actually pretty. That's not bad
for the time. That was very good. So it wasn't stereo sound, but you actually could have an octave at that. Not an octave. No, 3 would not give you an octave.
No. It's
right, but you could have 3 different.
You could have a triad.
Right, you could have 3 level audio different audio sounds playing at the same time. And again, the fact they had
sweet ass chord.
Yeah, chord at that point. Yeah, you could have a chord.
Yeah, you could just see the light, like the gleam in Larry's eyes.
All right, you ready? Larry's been waiting for this.
Okay, Larry, you've been waiting on this.
Larry's been waiting for this.
I have.
After the Intellivision, Mattel went dead. For years. To arrive.
And that's
again.
It. That's the only system they've ever done.
Nope.
What?
They arose again in 2003.
Like a phoenix.
Like a shitty little phoenix.
But the only people that got burned were us because the machine they made was a Hyperscan. The worst console ever made.
I've never heard of it.
It's so bad that we're going to dedicate an entire episode to how awful this game system was.
Okay, wait. I might debate that with you. The Hyperscan was bad, but I can probably get one that worse.
What? What was
wait,
worse?
Wait. Okay, so the Hyperscan was a bad system. The RCA Studio 2.
Yeah, but the Studio 2 didn't have the advantage of
of technology. 30
years
of real
technology. They didn't know better.
Okay, you're right. You're right. The Hyperscan was the worst.
Hyperscan.
What frame are we talking? What gen are we talking with the Hyper? And
yeah,
I know
this is going up against the Xbox 360.
So they tried to rise again against the Xbox. They've been dead.
Oh, please save this for the Hyperscan episode. Yeah.
Okay, we are saving this all for the Hyperscan
okay,
episode.
All right. Next time. All right.
G2B.
It's
really going to be ColecoVision, but still, the Hyperscan's coming.
So
terrible.
With bated breath.
All right. That said, we are going to take a quick break so Rob can totally relax. And then we're going to talk about Intellivision Best Bets.
All right.
What up, nerds? I'm Noob, and you're watching G2B.
And we are back. With Guys, Games, and Beer on the Intellivision. We're going to talk about best bets, best games to play, the best, the B, the E, the S, the T. I couldn't spell best. Boy, have another drink, Mr. Benson.
What the hell are you drinking that we're not?
Everything, pretty much.
Okay. All right, be smoking a little, too.
All right, here we go.
Actually, I'm going to let Travis start, because you brought up a best bet I didn't even think about.
Okay, well, I think that, and again, I really loved it in the arcades, Bump and Jump. Again, since this is the first 16-bit console, it really it looks really great on the Intellivision. And it's the controls are pretty simplistic, so you can kind of get around on the controller. Another one, another good arcade port that I found that looks really nice on the Intellivision. I haven't played a whole lot of it, but Q-Bert, and the controls are so fucking hard that that controller doesn't matter anyway. So you're gonna suck at it regardless of what console you're playing on.
Of hell.
Yeah, exactly.
Who the hell was ever good at Q-Bert?
Yeah, that's it. So you know you can play Q-Bert, it's not gonna matter with that controller. So, but yeah, no, I think there's, again, for the time, the really, really beautiful arcade ports. I don't know really much about television.
I'm gonna continue that thought and go, their Burger Time was the shit.
Yeah, see, now you just took the one I was gonna do, because yeah. You're right. Their Burger Time was the first good port of Burger Time.
Right.
It looked like the one in the arcade.
And actually, I think it actually handled better than the one in the arcade. The arcade was super tight on the controls. If you were just slightly off, you were stuck. And the Intellivision version was actually a little more, it was still tough, but a little more forgiving, I thought. And it looked really good. So Burger Time is really right up there. So they're ports. So they were bringing home the arcade experience.
Yeah, you know, and again, this is, at the time, arcades were off the charts. The arcades were the big thing. This was early 80s, 81, 82. So arcades were in their heyday, and Intellivision did a good job of bringing home the arcade games. I was also going to go with Burger Time now as my number one, because it really did look just like the version you were playing at the arcade. I'm going to disagree with you about the controls. I didn't necessarily like it. But again,
do we need to pull it out? Do we need to...
No. We might.
If they were shitty, then they were exactly like the arcade.
No, the arcade for Burger Time was not that bad. You figure because it wasn't great, but it was a four-way, basically. You were going up and down the ladders. You were going across the platforms. I mean, it was a fairly straightforward game.
You were shooting some pepper.
Thank you. I shoot my pepper every time I get a chance.
The thing about Burger Time, if you notice, there's the rungs of the ladder. And you might get sort of like a normal step where that one rung just before the actual top might be sort of a skip. Where you once you hit that one, you can sort of flow to whatever new direction you want to go. This Burger Time never allowed you to skip that step. You had
at
to hit
arcades,
every single
about.
One
at
of them.
The arcades, where on the Intellivision version, you're right. You could kind of slide your thumb over, and you would go to that direction. So, no, you're right. I guess from that standpoint, it did make the game a little easier.
Now, this is the era that you guys like had 16 games, and those were like your competitive scene arcade games?
When it came to real arcades, the actual arcades, not home consoles. Yeah, you really did. There were some big titles out there, and usually there were a fairly limited number of big titles that at the arcades were the competitive scene.
So when Intellivision had Burger Time on the console, were there competitions in the console scene that were against the arcade scene?
No. No, at that time, those were two completely different scenes. You bought a... Oh, wait, Larry's going to disagree with me on that.
No, I'm gonna support you. Okay. You didn't have to jump so quick. Okay. I was gonna support you on that because even box to box, if that motherboard inside of one machine was different from the other machine,
console.
That was not okay. No, I'm just, he was saying arcade competition. Oh, so if you had a motherboard that was a slightly, like, maybe a year different, so those were not okay. You had to have motherboard to motherboard in those competitions.
So those competitions were all of these arcade, these, I don't know how many, whatever competition is, whatever tournament is, 16, these are the exact same cabinets from this run this year.
Yeah.
That's where we're going.
That is very true. Donkey Kong is a classic example of that. There were.
I'll give them props on this. They do cover that in the King of Kong documentary, where there was question about when the record was beaten, whether or not it was beaten on the right motherboard, and in order to like validate it, he had to like send his motherboard in, you know, or at least like have someone check the motherboard, come out and check the motherboard that he played it on.
Right. So, it get back in the day, very often with arcade games, we've gone far afield here, but very often arcade games, the motherboard varied wildly. But the whole thing is the operator of the arcade could swap out the ROMs on it. And the same motherboard could support multiple ROMs. The same thing I could be playing Donkey Kong on would also play Burger Time or something else. You would just switch the ROMs out. The processor was the same. The video card might be slightly different but could still handle it. It really was the OS was all on those ROMs and you could change them out. So, but no, console gaming back then did not compete against true arcade gaming. So the Intellivision versions were not the same and would never be compared to the same.
Did they ever try to run Intellivision like competitions of this is the high score on the Intellivision?
I mean, sure, they probably did. I mean, Atari did. I would imagine all of them did. I didn't see any contests.
Yeah, but they never made a horrible movie about it.
They never made a horrible movie about it.
Wait, Larry, who are you talking to?
Myself, apparently. I was just saying that they never made a horrible movie about it, you know?
And what horrible movie would that be, Larry?
You know, it's funny, it's not the one you're thinking of.
I know, continue.
I was
thinking of Pixels.
Like The Wiz Kid?
That's a horrible movie, good point. I recently saw Pixels in an altered state, and it wasn't bad.
Wait, altered state's a great movie.
Also from about the same time. I'm not talking about altered beast, dude. I'm talking about me being in an altered state.
Called altered states. It's great about like sensory deprivation.
Yeah,
it's so great.
So me and Larry both think that basically Burger Time is probably the best.
It was a top notch game that I remember actually playing. When I've done a little research for this, and I did some sort of video, YouTube kind of stuff. There are some other games. I don't want to step on Rob's toes. What are you going with, Rob? Before I,
I'm gonna go with Astro Blast.
Okay, so I was gonna say the AD&D ports are actually pretty interesting. They seem to actually look like they're playable, and they kind of feel like Dungeons and Dragons kind of stuff.
Play it without a manual.
No, you're right.
Which is a good sign for a D&D game.
Yeah, if you're not playing with like three books, you're not doing it right. House rules only go so far.
D&D ports was a good call, though.
Oh yeah, a lot of people love that game.
Talked
begrudgingly about it once on my station. That was a mistake.
Now that actually was the first AD&D port, if I remember correctly, on a video game. I mean, a licensed port.
I'm sure because. You know, Intellivision was actually pretty big on licensing.
Yeah. So I don't think anybody else had based on the Gary Gygax universe, D&D game before Intellivision did.
Well, and they certainly did. They had two of them.
Now, how in-depth was it? Was it kind of like, with me, I'm used to being able to go out and buy, for the tabletop version, just buy, here's a pre-made campaign. How different was the game? Or was it like every single time I am the barbarian who is just going to smash the face out of this evil wizard?
It was more in the roguelike type of category.
Yeah.
It wasn't real. They're going to hate me for that.
Roguelike or roguelite?
It's a dungeon crawler. But it did.
Okay, so it's my basic hack and slash. Let me get through this not super in-depth storyline.
Yeah, you could buy equip, you could equip and so on and so forth, and it also, again, was a licensed D&D, and it was AD&D, not just D&D. It was Advanced Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, and I gotta tell you, there are a number of covers for that game, which are actually beautiful. That, you know, different artwork on the
box itself. Choose Your Own Adventure books from Advanced Dungeons and Dragons were beautiful.
No, but
Artwork back in the day was amazing. Obviously.
Yeah, well, the Magic always did great artwork. Yeah,
and you know, the funny thing about it is we haven't brought it up, but I seem to recall that Intellivision was actually known not for the action stuff that we're talking about, but for the sports components.
Yeah, but I play none of them.
Either did I. But their number one selling game was not the NFL. Was it the NFL football?
That was the baseball.
Was the baseball? Yes, thank you. Was their baseball game? That was the number one selling game for it.
It wasn't called MLB Baseball, though. It was just called Baseball, right?
No, I think it was NLB Baseball, actually, and it was the number one selling game. So they're
NBL?
I feel like there's some corrections on the way.
What's that?
Send your corrections to...
Yeah. We're all drunk at this point.
But was it recognized by the National Baseball League so we can avoid the three letters?
Yes, I think it was. And it was, again, it was a really... Their sports, that was the best-selling game they had for the Intellivision. Surprising. Not the shoot-em-ups, not the Magic games, not the D&D games. It was a sports game that was the number one selling cartridge.
So bros before nerds. Gotcha, dude.
No, dad before kids.
And I think that's evident in the choices of games that they put in the retro version of them. When you buy, of course, we've talked about these before, where you can buy like the flashback systems, ColecoVision or Atari or whatever. But the Intellivision version one, a lot of the games on the Intellivision version of that are sports games.
The bonus one is too.
A couple reasons, though, but that's also because of licensing, because those were actually owned by Mattel. Mattel wrote most of those games in house. Unlike the Magic games and the D&D games, I think, were all written outside of house. Or was D&D in house?
I think AD&D was in house. I think it's an official.
I don't know these systems that well. I don't know the Intellivision that well. But I think that the sports games would be easier to just pick up and play and enjoy for the...
Oh. No. I disagree with that, because you had all sorts of... So, again, and if you look, let's see if I have a sports game here. No, I do not have one.
I think I left those out on purpose.
Yeah, you obviously don't have a sports game, but I'm going to say sports, besides, like, I don't want to really pick up D&D, like, from how I know D&D, picking up D&D and then just run a campaign real quick versus let me just play three innings of baseball.
Right, again... Not so much, again, the sports games really weren't, again, designed for the kids. That was designed so you'd get dad to buy you the damn system.
Bowling.
I love bowling.
We all know that the height of bowling was 1979.
Right, so if you wanted dad to buy you a system, you said, hey, look, Dad, it's got this great bowling game on it.
There went all the bowlers in the audience.
We love bowlers. I'm just stating like facts.
Silver Strike 2009. Woo!
All right, so what's next, Rob?
All right, so Astro Blast was going to be mine. And it is a Space Invaders alike. It's a little bit more like Galaga because the bad guys drop down on you. It was really nice because it had enemies and it had asteroids, but the really creative part of it that I thought really makes it awesome is if you missed an enemy, it subtracted from your score. So you had a really good reason to go and shoot everything you could see, which meant you were taking risks. You were taking risks with the discs, because that disc controller was hell. So you were really putting yourself out there when you were playing that game.
I don't really understand. Wouldn't you have a really good reason to really hold back till you see the whites of their eyes?
Well, no. that's one of the risks you took. Hold. You wanted to get too close to you.
But you wanted to hit everything, and there's a lot coming down. I mean, it was not pulling. It was not just throwing one thing at you.
So you're min-maxing the entire time. It will cost me more points to miss this target than to attempt at this target.
Right.
You're going crazy on it.
Yeah. You got lives pretty regularly because you were throwing yourself out there, and I liked it for that. Unlike Space Invaders, which is more of a you hide, you fire. This thing, you were out there, man.
Wow.
And you were out there with the substandard controls.
So, like,
wait.
Yeah.
Oh. So, wait. So, Space Invaders was the first, camping game?
Yes, and I learned everything.
About camping.
Rob is super good at Space Invaders.
My entire Black Ops game. Space Invaders, really.
Just hide behind this building, wait for them to pop out past it, and shoot them.
Damn straight.
That is it. That is camping to a team.
You were super good at GoldenEye, too, weren't you?
Camp the body armor.
All right.
Couldn't control that thing.
I think, Rob, we have kind of talked about the Intellivision.
Yeah.
Well, I got to bring up, we're coming up on Christmas. And I'd like to talk about...
For Christmas?
I would like to talk about the last or at least what I could find, the last game made for the Intellivision and what year that it was made in.
It was Betty's Porn Palace.
No, it was not. It was
Porky's Revenge.
It was
Donkey Dong's 3D.
No, those things are true. Although I do think there was a 3D game for it, but we obviously are not going to go into that today.
Big Space Battle. All
right. the last game was made in what year? What year?
Well, they stopped making the actual systems in 91, so let me guess 96.
94.
You already told me, so I'm not.
Yeah, all right. Well, then, I thought you'd put a fake guess out there, but hey, no problem. Way to run with the stick.
We got no banter on this show.
So 2012.
Holy shit. Yeah. Really? Yeah.
It was a Christmas game.
Bullshit, that doesn't count.
Which is part of a television tradition.
That still counts. Which
is why I think it's important that there is a community out there that has a tradition.
Their tradition. A cartridge-based game.
Yes.
For it in 2012.
Yes.
Yes, Tom, who's not speaking into the mic.
Sorry, my mic is there.
I know.
I'm just going to look at it.
Yeah.
So they actually developed a cartridge-based game for it in 2012.
I mean, admittedly, it was not Mattel, but...
Still, but that was a thing. I mean, they have put out Christmas cartridges as a regular thing.
They do put out
television tradition.
Wow. So basically, every year before that, they were putting out one.
They kept putting them out. I don't know if they were every year. I don't know if there was a.
Yeah, I didn't get the sense that it was every year, but I was really thrown back by that. You know, it's an Intellivision game. That has a Facebook page.
Okay, but that being said,
Whoa. I need this in first. Intellivision is still a company? Yes?
No.
Okay, so then who the hell is putting out their games?
The fandom? The fandom.
Okay, all right. Okay, I can take a breath because I thought it was Intellivision putting out random Christmas.
Well, now to be fair, Mattel still exists, so theoretically they could put out games.
They're busy with the Hyperscan too.
That should not surprise.
And stay tuned for that action.
That should not surprise anyone because Larry, you picked up a game this year called Fix-It Felix 4.
For the Sega Genesis,
which hasn't been made in 20 or 30 years, so
dude, that is dope. That is awesome.
It was a cartridge-based game. It's a cartridge-based game.
Cartridge.
Yes. That you throw into your throw into your Genesis 16 and play a game that never existed, as if it had.
Yeah, so they still are making, this is the one thing I do like about all the different communities, whether it's the Intellivision or the Genesis community or the Vectrex community, there are still a lot of people, individuals, making cartridges.
Nerds.
Okay, nerds making cartridges for the old gaming system.
I will say, if you see us at a con,
you might be able to
play that game.
Not just that game, but a lot of games, like ones for the Vectrex, and games that you may not normally find that have been made recently.
Stay on target.
All right, so we've all talked about what we're
using the Force.
All right.
Okay, Rob has refocused an otherwise unfocusable team.
It's my birthday. Remember to tell him it's my birthday.
Okay, wait. It's Ben's birthday.
Today is December.
Today
is December 1st, the day that Ben came kicking and screaming and covered in blood. Oh, well, that was yesterday.
But it wasn't after my sister.
Oh.
That's it.
I'm done.
Hey, but wait. Let's just.
Oh, for God's sake.
Don't let him elaborate on that.
No, we're done.
Cut the umbilical cord.
I just want to say, sing happy birthday.
No.
No, we're not. Okay, so, thank God. All right, so, what have you learned today? Well, what we've learned today is that old game systems still have a lot of life in them. The Intellivision here, you can get this guy pretty cheap. Inside of $100, generally $60, you can get this console. It's a fun console. It has a lot of great games. Definitely pick up an Intellivoice if you get one. Worth playing, I would say.
Yeah, mind you, again, four cartridges for it, but... It really does add to the system.
And it's dead sexy and white.
Heck yes.
Yep. All right. Thanks for watching Guys Games and Beer. Don't forget, you can check us out at www.guysgamesandbeer.net. Also, you can check us out on Twitter. That's at Guys Games Beer. No and, please. And Facebook for free games. www.facebook.com/guysgamesandbeer. Oh, my God. I'm being accosted. All right. Thank you much for watching. Bye.
Avinasen.